Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and tonight we will be talking with Henry Greenstein, the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World and KUSports.com. He is going to preview the Kansas Jayhawks, who are 1-0, and Illinois is going to play them this Friday night at 6:30 on ESPN2. This is the first time that Illinois has played at Kansas since 1892. That's right, well over 120 years ago, when Illinois lost in what must have been a sparkling 26-4 game. These two teams don't play very often. The last meeting was a 47-7 Kansas victory at Illinois back in 1967. Thank goodness the Illini shut out Kansas in 1916, 1917, and 1929. They own a 3-2 advantage over the Jayhawks in terms of the series lead. This should be a very good game, a high-risk game for the Illini going on the road to a non-conference power team. They have not won one of these games since 2007 when they defeated Syracuse, and before that in 2001 when they defeated Cal. So the good thing is when Illinois beats a non-conference power team on the road, they go to the Rose Bowl or apparently the Sugar Bowl. So there's a lot riding on the game. But anyway, after this message, we'll be back with Henry Greenstein.
Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by broadcasting on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. We have over 20 stations, including stations in Chicago, St. Louis, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, the Quad Cities, Rockford, Peoria, Marion, Quincy, and Jacksonville, amongst others. You can reach over 11 million people in the state of Illinois by partnering with us. Send me an email, mike@IlliniGuys.com, and let's find a way that we can build your business together.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini, and as promised, we have Henry Greenstein, who is the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World and KUSports.com. So, Henry, thanks for coming on Eye on the Illini this week to talk a little bit about a pretty scary game for the Fighting Illini fans visiting the Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah, I'm really excited to discuss it. I think this is a super pivotal moment for both of these teams as they try to build on the momentum of last season.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And we've already talked with our fans about the fact when Josh Whitman, who has been a very good athletic director for Illinois, when he decided to play Toledo and Kansas, I'm not certain that he thought Toledo would be the defending MAC champions, nor did I think he planned on Kansas coming off of a bowl appearance with that 13-year dry streak that they had before Lance Leipold got there.
Yeah, it's funny how those things work out. And actually, before he was at Illinois, I believe Josh Whitman was the athletic director at my alma mater, Washington University in St. Louis.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I think that both of these teams are trying to get back to a level they have not accomplished since 2007. I think Illinois' step forward in some regards was even more of a giant leap than Kansas's last year. But on the other hand, Kansas has been so starved for success that the level of hype around this team this year is unlike anything that I've seen before. And yeah, the players are under a lot of scrutiny, and that really comes down to this game in part, like a Friday night primetime with new uniforms. And I heard Brett Bielema talking about this in his press conference, that the level of anticipation around this game for Kansas is off the charts.
Yeah, and it is. And Illini fans have a similar history to what Kansas fans have. Is it seems like when the team gets good, the rug always gets pulled out from under the feet of the Illini fan. Obviously, that's a little melodramatic, but as somebody who's been through a long time ago, like the 80s, Illinois won. They had a winning record 8 out of 10 years from 81 to 91. And then since John Makovic left for Texas in 1991, they've had 8 winning years since then. So it's a very, very sensitive group in terms of just been very frustrating for Illini fans, because you have a good year and then you're anticipating a second year, and it's a challenge. Now, in Illinois' opener, they played a very, very tough Toledo team, a team that I think their worst case scenario, barring, you know, injuries, would be a 10-2 season. It's a pretty good MAC team. Now they've come up against the Kansas Jayhawks on the road. I think the biggest question that people have is who is going to be the quarterback this Friday night.
And that is indeed, Mike, the million-dollar question that everyone wants to know the answer to. I think that the messaging out of Kansas has been so inconsistent since August 7th, the first day that we spotted that Daniels was not there during the open portion of practice to media. And there's just so much uncertainty surrounding it. And I think that's for a few reasons. You know, I think KU is especially sensitive because of the way that information was and was not disseminated when Daniels had his shoulder injury last year that caused him to miss four games and sort of halted KU's momentum after that 5-0 start. I think that's one reason why they've been rather cagey about it. The other thing is, I think maybe just the nature of an injury like this, which has been described as back tightness, is that it can reoccur and it can disappear and it can come back without warning. And, you know, on last Monday, prior to the Missouri State game, Lance Leipold said, when he was asked, is Jalen starting on Friday? He said, well, we just put out our depth chart, the depth chart on which Daniels was first, of course, and we're going to play everyone who's available, and Jalen practiced today. And a lot of people sort of used deductive reasoning from that and said, well, Lance Leipold says Jalen Daniels will start on Friday, but he didn't really say that. And sure enough, we monitor things in the hours leading up to kickoff, and then we see Jason Bean come out there. And I think KU is really fortunate to have Jason Bean, who's a sixth-year senior who's started numerous games at the Power 5 level, and even before that was a starter at North Texas. But I do think that, especially matching up against a team like Illinois, where a lot of the rushing lanes will be clogged by those great defensive tackles, and the secondary might be a little more vulnerable, you want to have the best possible pure passer out there. And so I think it'll be super important for Jalen Daniels to start to give KU the best chance possible. And, you know, yesterday we heard from Lance Leipold that he had taken the most reps he has at any point since the initial injury. And we heard from offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki today that level of reps continue today. So right now I feel more certain that Daniels is going to start this Friday than I did heading into last Friday's game.
Okay. Now, you know, looking at the stats, Bean, you know, last week went, 22 for 28 with 276 yards and two TDs against the Missouri State Bears. I don't care what level of competition you're up against. That's a pretty good day. And he even rushed for another 41 yards and had a long run of 17. So I'm not certain that Illinois is dodging the biggest bullet, you know, just because of the play of Jason Bean.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I didn't mean to diminish what Bean has accomplished, because, you know, quarterbacks coach Jim Zabrowski said that Bean is the most improved player he's ever seen in his 30 years of coaching. That's high praise. And everyone's been raving about how much more of a leader he is and just how important it was for him to come back. He has the respect of his teammates, certainly. He's become a more aggressive runner to the extent that he doesn't go out of bounds, which was a common gripe of KU fans as much as he once did. And, you know, the game against Missouri State, that stat line does belie the fact that he made some pretty ill-advised throws. He tried to hit Jared Casey in triple coverage at one point. But it was still a very impressive performance. He was really efficient. He found Luke Grimm and Quentin Skinner and Lawrence Arnold early and often, just in the way you'd hope for Daniels to. And certainly I think that if Bean does get the start, which I think is less likely now, but if he does get the start, I do think it'll still be a very competitive game. And that will create a sort of different challenge just because of Bean's pure speed on the outside and what he can present in like a speed option kind of scenario. Daniels is an elite athlete himself, but a lot of people, including within the program, believe that Jason Bean is the fastest member of the team.
Wow. Okay. Now that's a key learning there that this makes me even more uneasy as an Illini fan, based upon, you know, how much Finn was able to get loose last week against Illinois for almost 100 yards. So the Illini's defensive line did not play to the level that was expected of them. It's one game, so you kind of have to file that in the to be judged later category. What type of running game does Kansas have, you know, out there? Devin Neal came close to the century mark, averaging, you know, 7 yards a carry for 94 yards last week. Tell us a little bit about the running backs.
Yeah, so Devin Neal, a Lawrence native, he's a hometown kid, much beloved here. An elite runner, I believe, you know, preseason all-conference selection. The challenge for Kansas is to give Neal the requisite number of carries that he deserves while also working in the several other talented backs they have in their backfield. Against Missouri State, four different running backs scored rushing touchdowns, those being Devin Neal, Dylan McDuffie, Daniel Highshot, and Sevion Morrison. And for Neal and McDuffie, that was both on their first carries of the game. So strong showing from those guys right out of the gate. They all have slightly different skill sets. You know, Highshot is seen as more of a bruiser. If you've seen his receiving touchdown at Duke last year, you know what I'm talking about. But I think that Andy Kolodnicki really likes to kind of customize different plays to these different players, and he does a great job tailoring sets to different personnel. I think that you can expect that wasn't like just a, hey, we're playing FCS team, let's throw in all these guys. Illinois will have to see all four of those guys, and even Tory Loughlin, who is a converted quarterback, something that I know that Illinois fans are familiar with. Tory Loughlin was recruited like 6 years ago to KU as a championship winning quarterback out of Texas. He's gone through many phases as a running back, receiver, and special teamer, and he's on the depth chart there too. Another guy you got to watch out for. So, yeah, lots of weapons, and all those guys will be used in the running game to some extent, just a matter of how much.
Now, when it comes to a receiving standpoint, again, another position that Kansas looks to be really deep in on this offense.
Yeah, you're correct about that, though. I will say that they have a couple guys who are questionable this week. Okay. Tanaka Scott, who's more of a backup but was seen as kind of a breakout candidate this year, didn't dress. He's dealing with it against Missouri State. He's dealing with a hamstring. He's seen as questionable. Luke Grimm, who scored the first touchdown from Jason Bean in that game, he exited after four catches for 33 yards. He's also kind of day-to-day as well. So those are two. I mean, Grimm in particular is kind of like a safety valve for these quarterbacks, regardless of whether it's Daniels or Bean. So that's significant to note. You know, Arnold and Skinner are great deep threats. And but I think that even if Grimm and Scott are both unable to play, yeah, it's a deep receiving core. Doug Emelian, the Minnesota transfer, has really done a lot with the extra reps he's gotten in those guys' absence. Trevor Wilson, who had a super impressive catch against Missouri State and is also the return man, will see more action. So I think losing Grimm and his ability to like get stuff done over the middle would be pretty unfortunate for KU, but I think they'll pick up the slack regardless. And the key point of emphasis for these guys all offseason was yards after the catch. So keep an eye out, I guess, for what they do when they turn around, catch a curl route, and then how quickly they're able to sort of like reverse direction and move forward or whatever.
And it's a long receiving core, you know, with Skinner at 6'5", Lawrence at 6'3". So these are the type of guys who can go up and get the 50-50 ball.
Yeah. And my understanding is that in a lot of ways, Illinois is built similarly in the sense that they have some tall guys on the outside and you know, Williams doing stuff over the middle. So I think in some sense, I mean, I guess that's sort of the entire concept of having a receiving core, but in some ways it'll be a familiar sight to Illini fans.
And when it comes down to the offensive line, obviously Kansas had they scored on almost everybody last year. It doesn't seem like if this gets into a high-powered shootout, Illinois may be running out of bullets quicker than Kansas will. How has the offensive line been for the team?
Yeah, so it's widely viewed as a strength. I think that in particular pass blocking, they were really good against Missouri State. Maybe run blocking wasn't quite up to that level. You know, Mike Nowitzki at center is the anchor. Dominic Pouniet, former Central Missouri transfer we got to talk to today, is the left tackle. You got Bryce Cabledew on the other side. And then guard spots are kind of interesting. You know, Michael Ford, who got penalized for unsportsmanlike against Missouri State, is one of the guards. Now, those are the four returning starters. Armaje Reed-Adams was kind of projected to be the starter at the other guard spot, but he didn't play the first game due to injury, so Kobe Baines started. Baines has come a long way, especially because he got a kind of a late start to the year in 2022. He was transferring from Louisville, and he had to wait on a waiver to get approved. So this has kind of been his first full offseason cycle in that sense, and he's progressed a lot. But I do think Baines will be a player to watch, especially because the interior defensive line for Illinois is so strong in that area. And yeah, I think that these guys, though they have had some success, are going to have their hands full to some extent. And that's part of why I think it's important for KU's passing offense to be the best that it can possibly be.
Okay. When it comes to special teams, punting, kicking, return game, how do Kansas look? And in particular, let's talk about, punting first, which Kansas didn't punt last week. So you're going to have to extrapolate here. What do they bring to the table at the punter position?
Yeah, this is an all new unit, just in general, because Leipold was not very happy with how things went down in a variety of ways last year. And, you know, Reese Vernon didn't have a very high average net yards. Jacob Ochoa was pretty erratic. So all new guys. At punter is the fan favorite, or at least the media favorite, Damon Greaves, who is a 23-year-old freshman from Australia out of the famous Pro Kick Academy that produces so many NFL punters. They basically recruited him over Zoom. Like, they just watched him punt while video conferencing because he was in Australia, and they had enough faith in him to bring him over. And by all accounts, he's been pretty good, and he's like a Australian rules football player, so he's got like tackling fundamentals and whatnot. But yeah, he didn't punt in the first game. Kicker, Seth Keller, the Texas State transfer, who was a Lou Groza watch list member, is the starter there, and he converted a couple field goals in the first game, so that was kind of a sigh of relief for KU people who saw a lot of inconsistency at that position before. Luke Cosper is back as the long snapper. Return game has not been much of a factor in years past, but I mentioned Trevor Wilson. He had one sort of promising return, and he's looking to bring a new element to that as well. So, yeah, a lot to be interested and excited about. They brought in Sean Snyder of the Snyder family from Kansas State as a sort of special teams analyst, and he's gotten some credit for the improvement. But, yeah, Taiwo Onatolu is still the special teams coach there.
Yeah, and Sean Snyder worked at Illinois last year. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes, so and, Hugh Robertson, Illinois' punter, is from Melbourne, Australia, and he's actually the third oldest player in college football at 30 years old.
It's crazy how that whole trend is seemingly restricted to just that one position.
Yes, yes. And it is something because, you know, he's a Pro Kick Australia product as well, played Australian rules football. And also spent 7 years working for the Victoria Police. So you've got a guy back here that I'm assuming that, you know, for Illinois, when the punt rush is coming on him, he's probably seen other things in life that have been just as scary. So when we take a look at the Kansas defense, now this defense had its moments last year. What are they returning? You know, let's talk about the defensive line first. How is this defensive line going to match up against Illinois' offensive line?
Yeah, the defensive line has been kind of the big mystery and what a lot of people view as a potential weak point. I mean, you know, Kansas' defense last year, you generously put that they had their moments. They struggled in a lot of games. I think their main moment was the Iowa State game where they held them to 11 points. Besides that, a lot of struggles against some of the higher power offenses of the Big 12. But yeah, defensive line. So they lose Lonnie Phelps, who is now on the Cleveland Browns practice squad. And in that void, they do not have a go-to pass rusher. So it's been kind of interesting to see the candidates to step up into that role. So far, they've mostly relied on kind of returning program guys like Jeremy Robinson, who's viewed as a leader in that group, and Hayden Hatcher. Everyone talks about who's he's one of the highest motor guys on the team, a former JUCO walk-on. Then we got some hyper athletic transfers like Austin Booker and Dylan Brooks, who were in the mix, and Patrick Joyner. And that position group, the rotation is still sort of being figured out. Robinson and Hatcher are the starters. And then a defensive tackle, Devin Phillips, the Colorado State transfer, stepped in and became a leader right away. People have a lot of respect for him. He shows them pass rush moves and highlight clips on his phone and stuff. Very well liked. And then, you know, there are a couple other guys in the mix that position, Tommy Dunn and DJ Withers, who are both guys who worked super hard to improve their body with strength coach Matt Gildersleeve in the offseason, are the kind of contenders at the other defensive tackle spot. I believe Withers officially got the start, but they were both in for a significant period of time against Missouri State. I don't expect that to change. But generally, it's just a lot of guys who have been in the program a while without super, you know, super significant playing time, who are all trying to take steps forward and become sort of the star of that group. And it's not really clear who's going to do that so far, or if it will just continue to be on, as the coaches say, a by committee basis.
Now, does that translate over to the linebacking unit as well?
No, linebackers are a bit more firmly. I mean, they have some improvement to do for sure, but, you know, like Rich Miller is a longtime leader here. He was at Big 12 Media Days representing the defense. He came from Buffalo, where Leipold's staff was before. Tywan Berryhill at the weak side spot. He was hampered by some injuries at camp, but he's still there. And then Craig Young plays what is called the hawk position on KU's defense, which is a kind of hybrid linebacker safety role. He was himself a safety, and he's actually one of the team's best pass rushers. So they've been trying to work out ways to have linebackers come off the edge and help out. Another guy you'll see a lot of, especially subbing for Berryhill, is J.B. Brown, one of the names we heard the most all through the spring and the fall, a Bowling Green transfer who apparently like hits the hardest of anyone on the team. And he was around. He got the deflection on Kobe Bryant's interception in the Missouri State game's fourth quarter. You'll see more of him. We didn't see Cornell Wheeler at all, but he's also believed to be a key reserve in the middle linebacker group.
And then we go down to the defensive backs. And, of course, Illinois ran into a preseason All-American last week for Toledo. What are we looking at here with Kansas in the defensive backfield?
Yeah, this group's going to be tested a lot more. I mean, as the coaches have been saying, they weren't really tested vertically super significantly in the Missouri State game. This is in theory supposed to be the strength of the defense, but I wasn't totally impressed by how they played against Missouri State, just leaving a lot of open space for the wideouts. And that's not something you should do against FCS wideouts. But Kobe Bryant, former all-conference selection, at one cornerback, Melo Dotson at the other, Kalen Gervin, Quentin Lassiter, the brother of Kwame Lassiter, son of Kwame Lassiter I, is also in the mix, and then Demarius McGee, LSU transfer. But yeah, you'll mostly see Bryan and Dotson as kind of the main anchors of that unit. At safety, kind of interesting. I mean, Kenny Logan's been there forever, and he'll continue to do what he's done. He's just an anchor at that position. You know, took a little bit of a step back last year as compared to the year before, so it'll be interesting to see how that trajectory continues this year. But the other position is interesting because O.J. Burrows was long viewed as a starter there, but Marvin Grant has sort of surpassed him. There's been a lot of discussion about how he's really kind of recommitted himself to improvement and watching film more than ever. And, you know, lots of things you hear about lots of guys, but in Marvin Grant's case, it seems to have paid dividends because he's now starting at that spot, whereas before he was sort of in a third safety role. I think this group is going to be face a dramatic increase in degree of difficulty. The KU coaching staff has a lot of respect for what Isaiah Williams can do in particular, and he's going to present a threat to these guys.
So, you've had a chance to watch one game. How do you see this game unfolding if you were going to try to make a, you know, in terms of a prediction, you know, any themes or any way you think this game's going to go after watching these two teams?
Well, odds are that KU will get off to a slow start because that's just kind of what they do. You know, dating back to last season and in the Missouri game, they just don't start off super fast. Maybe things will be different because of all the intensity surrounding this game, and like I said, the new jerseys and the blackout, and you know, the bringing a Big Ten opponent to campus for the first time in a while. But generally, you can count on KU getting off to a pretty slow start. From there, it'll be really interesting to see. I think this is going to be a gritty, low-scoring game, the likes of which KU does not often play. And I think that's because they are a team that is built to go over the top on offense and make big plays and try to fool you with trickery and pre-snap motion and lining tight ends up out wide and stuff like that. And everything we're hearing is that Illinois is a team that will force you to go straight ahead. And it's all about the physicality. It's going to be basically, I mean, not that KU isn't trying to be a physical team in every game, but this is going to be a test of that physicality and athleticism that they haven't seen before. I think it's going to be a battle in the trenches to a greater degree than KU has seen in a lot of its games, especially if they don't have Jalen Daniels arm to kind of take the top off the defense. I think this will be one of the lower scoring games of the year for KU.
Okay. So if you had to do a prediction, and I know we ask people to do this, and I realize it's early in the week here on a Tuesday night, but the game's on Friday, so it gives you a little bit better, a little less, mileage there. Do you have a winner and a final score that you have in mind?
Yeah, I am going to have to predict this in the next couple of days anyway, so it's not a big deal to think about. Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this. For a while, I just didn't think KU would be able to stack up. Illinois getting into kind of a dire situation against Toledo prior to that pick six made me lose a little bit of faith in the Illini in that respect. I'm thinking like Kansas by 3 or 2 points. I've been thinking like, it's 21-18 kind of thing, or 2017 in that domain. 2017 is the most common score in football, so not exactly a bold prediction on my part. I do think it'll turn on a couple of key turnovers. If you're Kansas, you got to avoid things like Daniel Hyshaw's random fumble that completely killed the momentum early on against Missouri State, or getting stuffed on a 4th and 1 with Devin Neal, which even killed the momentum further. I think that we'll like the Toledo game to some extent. It will turn on a couple of key turnovers, and KU's previously much maligned defense will be under pressure to be the beneficiary of those sorts of turnovers. But yeah, that's what I'm leaning slightly in KU's favor right now. That may change in the next 2 days before I write up my official preview for the game, but that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I had Illinois with an extreme amount of confidence winning 28-27. I think this is going to be a close game. I think it's interesting as Illinois tends to start off the first drive and look like, a Super Bowl championship team. And then the second drive and the third drive, you wonder, did somebody kidnap them? And so that's the formula we've seen, and we saw it again. They went right down the field against Toledo, and you felt really good about things. And then next thing there have been two additional possessions that Illinois didn't do anything with the ball.
Yeah.
And then the penalties, which are, that's not Bielma's thing to have a team that makes a lot of mistakes. And they had 9 penalties by halftime. Only had one in the second half, but it was one that set up the final score for the Rockets, a late hit that just didn't make sense at all. And that one, that penalty made no sense at all, and it ended up almost costing them the game. And those are uncharacteristic to have those for the Illini. That's something that if they do that against an offense like Kansas, it's going to be an extremely long night.
Yeah, it's hard to know how things like turnovers and penalties carry over from week one because everyone's trying to find their form in week one. You don't know if something's going to become a trend or not. But yeah, it's interesting to hear just kind of how these teams have a shared history in a lot of ways, but they're also polar opposites in some others. And yeah, it should make
Well,
for a really compelling matchup.
yeah, and there was, and to be honest, the night that Lance's team got beat, Buffalo got beat in their championship game. There was a lot of thought in Champaign that the next day that he was going to be named coach.
Yeah, and
And
yeah, I've heard good conversations. Yeah.
Brett Bielma was a pretty well choreographed surprise, as many people had went on the record thinking that it was going to be Lance Leipold. And so you've got two guys who have similar type of personalities and you know, going at it, and they know each other and respect one another. So it should be a great game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. They have this whole shared history just from, you know, when Bielema was at Wisconsin, Leipold was at Wisconsin Whitewater. He used to use their indoor facilities. When Leipold got his first Division I job at Buffalo, Bielema invited him down to Fayetteville to have some like a crash course, in being a Division I coach. And that was when they were preparing for a bowl game. And that generosity has really made an impact in Leipold. I think they saw each other at the draft in Kansas City this past spring too. So they've been in pretty close contact. And yeah, it's not often you see coaches who are kind of closely connected in that way.
Any other comments or thoughts? I may not have covered everything you thought I was going to.
No, I feel like you did. I just can't stress enough how much it feels like this is an inflection point in the season for both teams. Teams that got off to a really strong start last year. You know, I know Illinois lost that game early, but still won so many of their early games. And KU started 5-0, of course. And it almost feels like this will determine in some sense, or at least have a huge impact on whether or not they're able to replicate that sort of early start, or if they find themselves plunging into some sort of downturn. So yeah, really important.
Yeah, Illinois fans are constantly aware of the fact that bad things could happen. And mainly because since 1992, you know, 8 winning seasons, that is just to give you a context of that, since 1951, Ohio State has had 5 losing seasons. Illinois has had 8 winning seasons in the last 32 years. Well, so, you know, your fandom develops certain habits based on what they've seen. And so Illinois fans are very concerned about this. But the good thing for Illini fans, which is probably what we are really hoping for, is that if they can find a way to defeat Kansas, the last time they beat a non-conference power team on the road was 2007, believe it or not. And they beat Syracuse, and the Illini ended up in the Rose Bowl.
Yes.
And then the time prior to that was 2001, when they beat California, and they ended up winning the Big Ten championship and playing in the Sugar Bowl. So Illinois is really hoping apparently we can book it. If they win this game, we're looking at a Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl type of appearance. So there you have it. I'm not certain that there's any linkage that's logical of what I'm saying, but I'm just reading these two, the last time it happened type of things.
Well, I'm sure that will be pertinent again next year when the same matchup is replayed in Champaign, and everyone's going to be talking about it then too.
Yes, I think these two teams will have two back-to-back years of very competitive games. And again, it's nice when you have coaches who have that mutual respect and that relationship as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Of course, folks, if you were interested, Henry Greenstein, sports editor for the Lawrence Journal World and KUSports.com. So you can go out, and I would highly recommend you looking at his stuff. That's how I chose to bring him on the show. I had interesting articles, and I would definitely say to get prepared for the game. I don't think there's any better place to be.
I appreciate you saying that, Mike. I appreciate you reading, and I'm very grateful to have this opportunity.
Thank you. And we will be right back after these messages.
Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across this great nation, or halfway across the planet, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know. Whether it's game results or what's going on in recruiting behind the scenes, IlliniGuys.com covers it. Only $99 a year, and you get a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button that's right next to the 7-day free trial, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. IlliniGuys.com.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Eye on the Illini. A big thanks go out to Henry Greenstein, who decided to come on and help us out and give our fans a preview of the Kansas Jayhawks. You can catch him at the Lawrence Journal World and KUSports.com. Excellent writer who will get you prepared for this week's game. We look forward to seeing you after the game. We will be doing a podcast right after with our instant take, and then we will do a more in-depth one about an hour after as well. We are really looking forward to this one. ESPN2, 6:30 p.m. Go Illini.